Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Hercules and the Space Gods. I am Hercules Invictus. Hercules and the Space Gods is a voyage of discovery that is currently unfolding through our podcasts on Mount Olympus and CERN, select chapters in Tim Beckley's paranormal anthologies, a variety of live and now Zoom events, and several articles published in various magazines over the past few years. Hercules and the Space Gods supports all of humanity's efforts to transcend this world and venture forth into the great beyond, be they metaphysical, mechanical, or even imaginal. And today on Spaced Out with Bob Vossel, we'll be plunging deep into the imaginal realm. Greetings and welcome, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me once again. And I'm looking forward to tonight. I know we had a couple of different plans for guests and such, but we're gonna delve into a little bit of horror, which seems appropriate given that This is the kind of looked at as the anniversary of our pandemic existence. While we are getting out of it one step at a time or one toe at a time, but we will be looking to a favorite of a friend of mine and a former, she's been on the show before, Anne Marie McGinley, who one of her passions and is Ash and the Evil Dead. So we'll be exploring that tonight. Plus, I think we'll delve into Resident Alien, which is a show which is on Sci-Fi Channel now and which we both enjoy. So we might get into that as well.
I'm a big Evil Dead fan. I don't know much about Resident Alien, but I suspect I'll learn a lot tonight. Before we start with your guest, who is here, by the way, I just want to remind you of a project that I suggested when we first started the show. And it's what if a future iteration of Hercules in the Marvel Universe was tasked by his group to discover what misfortune befell Apollo in the classic Star Trek continuity. This strange scenario, first explored in a home-based RPG game in the early 1980s, launched a storyline that spanned nearly four decades, spilled into fandom times, inspired countless quirky creative endeavors, helped promote literacy in Pennsylvania and northwestern New Jersey, and bridged many otherwise incongruous science fiction visions. In 2012, Stargate Olympus, as it was called for a while, wrapped up the tale in Die Gungan Die and Wookiee Holocaust, our two campaigns in northeastern Pennsylvania. The Time Wars followed and raged in New Jersey from 2013 to 2019. Afterwards, in the tradition of Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek, the original series, we re-envisioned our core premise, streamlined our mythos, and rebooted our epic journey. And then, just as we began, the pandemic came. So everything was shelved for about a year. And now on the anniversary of that shutting down, I decided to bring it back. And now that we have Zoom and we have Skype and we have all sorts of tools, time and space are no longer concerned, so we can proceed. So I don't know if you recall that, but that was the initial premise for the science fiction shows.
I do. I remember that. And so much, even though we seem to be locked in the same day at the same time, it also seems like so long ago, all at the same time, like when they say time is relative, I guess they're right because,
And your guest
pretty
is
soon
here.
We'll be marking things pre-pandemic, pandemic, and post-pandemic. When we get out of it.
Being that time is relative, is that way I can't remember what day of the week it is? Or is that just
one
pandemic head?
I think we've all had that memory where we've this is Tuesday. Oh no, it was Tuesday yesterday. That would make this Wednesday, and today being Thursday.
And I even have a gigantic calendar right in front of me, and I still don't know what day it is. I'll ask on Facebook, does anybody know what day it is? That's a song. Does anybody know? Oh, no, does anybody know what time it is?
what time it is. I'll pull back and I'll engineer and I'll leave you to your show. I look forward to listening to you guys talk about The Evil Dead and introducing me to Resident Evil.
Very good. Thank you.
This is definitely your area of expertise, Anne-Marie, because although I have seen, you know, the classic original movie and its sequel and the remake even, I did not really catch, you know, and I did see at least one episode of the series, but you are the uber fan of, you know, of Evil Dead. And of Bruce Campbell, of course, who I always appreciated, you know, no matter what he was in. Even
oh, yeah.
when he was in the short-lived series that was produced by the folks who create, you know, who made the Hercules and Xena TV series in the 90s, he played a pirate. And I think that might have been before we got the, you know, the Disney, you know, pirate movies. I think
and
that
it was,
predated.
Yeah, it was just before he got on Burn Notice, which is where people started to hear his name and started to go, oh. And that was a revival of the original Evil Dead because people started saying, what? I don't know who this guy is. Let me do some research. And do you? I'm going to tell the history of the Evil Dead, if that's okay, Bob. Bob has probably heard this 150,000 times. But Evil Dead started in Michigan outside of Detroit. It was Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi, who is now a big director, producer, if you don't know who he is. And they were kids growing up, and they were in high school. And they decided they wanted to make this movie called The Evil Dead, but they had no money. They were just kids right out of high school. And so they went around to their folks. They gathered up $500, and they made this little movie called Evil Dead. Now, the first one was actually a serious one. Well, as serious as Bruce Campbell and I want to call him Ted Raimi, but that's his... Sam Raimi, as evil as I'm sorry, as humor, shoot, it's pandemic head. Anyway, they made this little movie on $500, an 8mm film, and it was, it was called The Evil Dead, and what it basically was about was something that they actually would do if it really was real life. These kids their age took their girlfriends to this, oh, this is a spooky house, let's go stay in this spooky house, as young people will do, and older people will do. And so they went into this house, and they found this book, and it said, do not open, but of course, they're young people, and they opened the book, and it had all of these weird, like, stories in it. And said, don't read them. But they did, of course, because they're young, and that's what young people do, and and sometimes older people do. And when they read it, it released these things that zombies, basically, but they call them deadites in this series. And the rest of the movie is about how they finally, the deadites killed their girlfriends, and so they had to get the deadites back in. They were in the basement of the house, and they had to get them all back in the basement. And that's what the story was about. And it was pretty – it was not a humorous story. I mean, you know, as much as the whole concept is kind of funny, but it was not meant to be a humorous story. Then the second one, which was Evil Dead, Dead by Dawn, was a little more funny. Same premise. They just didn't go to the house, but they were fighting the deadites that were around. And that fighting the deadites is the running theme in all of the Evil Dead things, fighting deadites. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you a little bit about how that got. It wasn't in the three movies. They didn't. The three movies were that the deadites were released from that.
I don't remember if I saw the second one, because I think it was the third one where he goes back in time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. And so, yeah, Yeah, and they got sillier and sillier as they went along. So the second one had a lot of humor in it. By the time they got to the third one, like Bob was saying, he went back in time and was a pirate and all of this stuff. So, and it really was funny. But the thing they had consistently was every single one was gory. Getting mm-hmm. as they went along, getting to the point where even if you didn't like gory, they were funny because it was so much gore, it went over the edge. And then... Sorry, Bob, do you have something?
Oh, I was just wondering where he lost his hand. Was that the third one where he just, you know, that's where he got his iconic saw that he strapped onto his hand?
Yep. And, yeah, he lost it. And his name is Ashland. Oh, my goodness, what was his last name? This is called Pandemic Head. I can't remember Ash's last name. It'll come to me later. Yeah, he lost his hand, and he actually had a saw attached, an electric saw attached to his arm, and which is another interesting feature. So they did these movies, and then for a long, long time, Evil Dead just kind of sat, and Bruce Campbell went on to Burn Notice, and Sam Raimi went on to produce and direct many movies. And so they all had their different careers. And then a couple of years ago, I'm thinking it's like 4 years ago, they were asked to revive Evil Dead in the form mm-hmm. of a television show. And so I don't recall the channel that it was on. AMC maybe? I don't recall. I don't recall. But it wasn't
either,
ABC or NBC or CBS.
What are those?
One of those
cable channels. Yeah,
but it wouldn't have been on the regular ABC, NBC, CBS because no way are they going to show that. So this series, when it came to the television series, it didn't have a lot connected to the movies because they went with humor. If you can imagine an incredibly gory show that's actually extremely funny. Now, perhaps it's just my warped sense of humor, but apparently a lot of other people had the same warped sense of humor.
What I guess would be called dark humor, you know, or gallows humor, you know, from the few episodes that I saw. And I was surprised because it abruptly ended one episode, and I said, oh, my gosh, you know what happened? And you reminded me or told me that, no, it's supposed to be like a half hour or 40 minutes. It was not a full hour length or so that was,
and I think,
you know, the time was different.
I think that was actually a wise decision to only make it a half hour show, because if it was an hour we would get tired of seeing all the grisliness and all the blood. It would have lost its appeal. So I think it was really wise to make it a half an hour. It starts out with kind of the background on Ash Williams, that's his name, and Ashley Williams, and there was always a running joke.
Lee Majors, who, you know, our beloved Steve Austin of the $6 Million Man and Fall Guy and Heath from Big Valley, played his father, if I'm not mistaken.
His father, yeah, his father.
Was Lee Majors also in Burn Notice? Was he a character in that, or am I misremembering
something? Lee Majors?
I didn't know if they may have worked together before. I may be misremembering my shows because I know
it could be. I don't remember. And I've
watched
every, you know, because I'm obsessed with Bruce Campbell, I watched every episode of Burn Notice. Plus, it was a good show, you know. But now I've seen them several times due to the internet. But I really like Bruce Campbell.
I know, that's an understatement, yes.
He has a very warped sense of humor, as does Sam Raimi. And in the meantime, Sam Raimi's brother grew up. His brother's name was the name I kept calling Sam, and now, of course, I can't remember it, but I'll think of it. Ted.
Who was in Xena. You know, he was like... a supporting, you know, cast member in Xena. You know, it didn't hurt that your brother's, like, producing the show or involved with that.
And so, he was in the series Evil Dead on in a couple of things. He does his own thing now. He is very into horror, as all three of them are. And now he's doing like the, or he was doing the convention circuit and some really, really bizarre horror things. But Ted is a little bizarre himself, more bizarre than even Bruce or Sam, if you can imagine that. But that's hard to imagine, that anything could be a little more out there than Bruce and Sam. But yeah, he's doing quite well. Of course, you know, the conventions right now, of course, are on hold because of this pandemic. So, but he really likes going out and doing the conventions and meeting the fans.
I remember one of the most bizarre things. Well, it wouldn't have been bizarre. It would have been probably, you know, it probably would have drawn in a lot of fans, that when they did a number of years ago, the, you know, the Freddy Krueger meets Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th.
Right.
There was plans to follow that up with, you know, Freddy meets Jason again with Ash. You know, that they were going to do
that.
The three of them.
I didn't know that.
And that was at least in the talking stages, and I know that only because they eventually did that as a comic book. You know, not as a one-off comic book, you know, or you know, a mini-series comic book. And they basically said, well, since this didn't happen, I guess Freddy meets Jason didn't do as well at the box office, or as often happens, a new director, head of the studio comes in from, I guess it was Lionsgate or whatever, that owned both, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th and Ash, I guess, you know, the same studio. So I guess the plans changed and they didn't do that. And then they went in the direction for Ash for a TV series. So I guess they decided, hey, we're going to, you know, we'll use this idea and make it for a comic book story, you know, that I do recall seeing. So
cool.
That's just a little piece of information that I have, but you are the queen of this subject.
Of trivia. And we could sit here for 3 hours and listen to the trivia of either Evil Dead, but, you know, I doubt anyone but another Bruce Campbell complete fan would sit there for 3 hours and listen to this. There have been some debates on, like, Facebook about when they finished the series. Bruce Campbell had said, I'm never playing Ash again because, first of all, he's getting older, and he's really sick of all of this makeup and blood and running around. And he's just, you know, he's getting up there in the now, that's funny because he's my age, so when he says stuff like that, I'm like, oh, don't say that. But but so he was kind of retired for a while. He lives in Southern Oregon.
Were telling me that, and I know he went and did, and I don't know if he still does it. He was the host of the newest version of Ripley's Believe It or Not, and I think this time it went to the Travel Station or Discovery Channel, maybe.
Yeah.
I never got to see it. I never, you know, and I've been watching, you know, with this pandemic every so often, if there's nothing on, I will sometimes go to Channel 96, which in my cable system is the Discovery/Travel Channel. And they have all the supernatural, where they chase ghosts and, UFO sightings, and have all these shows. I think even the Osbournes have a show on it.
Oh, my goodness.
And a few weeks ago, I came across a show that was fascinating, and I stayed up ridiculously late on a weeknight to watch several episodes of a show that is hosted by Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger, and it would mixed history, which I love, and horror, which I love, together, and you know, told an actual historical story. and kind of gave it a horror spin of what could be, you know, like mixing ghosts and things like that with it. And, of course, they were three different stories within the span of 1 hour. And he kind of introduced the story. And then you had a couple of panelists that would gave their opinion on, you know, some of the background, like some guy from, I think it was Baltimore. I might be wrong, but, you know, just to give an example, it was a show that would show the story was about, in this segment, was about the true story. And I'd heard this story before of a guy who they were building a park, but it was an old unkept cemetery. So they were going to pay this guy. This was like the turn of the last century in the late 1800s to basically, you know, get the bodies out and they would relocate them. But this guy was greedy, and he knew that, you know, if he took so many bones and had so many coffins, so he was actually dismembering the bodies so that there would be more coffins. That meant he and his crew would get paid more.
Okay.
But eventually they caught on to this, you know, and of course in this version, you know, in this kind of reenactment, you know, there was also like a ghost involved with, you know, that was scaring him and stuff like that. And he, at the end of this, he got his comeuppance by, you know, somebody that knew his secret past, because he never really got in trouble. He just got fired. So,
okay. Cool.
You know, I thought that was highly entertaining, because it was, you know, it gave some actual history. And yes, it did give a horror spin to it.
A little spin on it. And it's Robert Englund, who I love.
And it was Robert Englund. And who will be returning as Freddy Krueger, you know, somebody who probably would have thought would have given up his role, just like Ash saying, you know, enough is enough, you know, I don't want to do. And he had much more makeup on than Bruce Campbell, you know, did. But and they did do a remake of A Nightmare on Elm Street, and I think they picked a really good actor, but no actor can really replace Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger.
No. And I always loved those movies, again, because they had somewhat of a macabre sense of humor.
Yeah, I can see Ash and Freddy Krueger more so than so Jason. I always think that they didn't even need to throw Jason. If they had made that movie, they didn't really need Jason Voorhees in there, you know, because, well, Jason doesn't talk anyway, you know.
Right.
But you can imagine the exchange of you know, between Freddy Krueger and Ash. I mean,
it would be great.
It would be
hilarious.
Yeah, and you basically, you know, Ash is the good guy, even though he's such a, you know. So you'd have, you know, it would be a priceless movie. I think that would be, I hope maybe somebody will decide, hey, this is, why not, you know, give it a shot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be, I would go see that.
Yeah, I definitely would.
You know, and you're right, Ash is such a jerk. But when they opened that book, he became this kind of head person to kill all the deadites.
Yeah,
he's
still fights for the, you know, the good side,
yeah.
You know.
They picked the wrong person, because he's living in this beat-up trailer and he does nothing but drink and chase women. So, yeah, he's going to be a great hero. But that was from the show, and it was very funny, very funny. And he also was paired up, what's Xena's real name, the actress's name?
Lucy Lawless, yes.
Lucy Lawless.
Show.
He was paired up again with Lucy Lawless because Bruce periodically would be on Xena. And apparently he and Lucy Lawless are very good friends. So Lucy went on to the Evil Dead series. And so that was interesting, because he would bring, you know, Bruce would bring in people he knew. It was a very, very neat show. It lasted for 3 seasons. And then I guess the channel thought, well, you know, what else can we do with this character? He's hunting deadites. How long can you do that? And, you know, then I thought of something like Dracula, which has been 60, 70 years of still fighting, a vampire. And first of all, it was a very expensive show to produce because of all the special effects and all of the makeup, and especially on Ash. And so it was a very expensive, and it really didn't garner that big of an audience. It was a very specific audience, because most people would look at it and go, that's really gross.
Because it was a combination of horror, some things that were horrific and gross, and had campy humor. So, I mean, it kind of had its special audience.
Yeah, very specialized audience. A lot of Bruce Campbell fans who kind of went, yeah, what's that about? But also fans who were introduced to Evil Dead, and then the movies became so much more popular because people said, they would look on the internet and say, what else was this? And also it boosted, believe it or not, some of Sam Raimi's movies that had nothing to do with Evil Dead. But, yeah, it was a whole – because Evil Dead fans tend to – anything that's connected to Evil Dead or Bruce Campbell, they will love and obsess about. I obsess about Bruce Campbell. I don't necessarily obsess about everybody who's in contact with him. But I find his sense of humor is similar to mine.
I came across that rumor, I had to post it to your page – but I got to be honest, I didn't actually read it. So I don't know just how solid a story that is. It looked like it had some truth to it, but what would this series be? Is it a continuation of that?
It's going to be a movie. I have a friend who is deep into the entertainment. She does interviews with entertainment people. So she talked, and Bruce is a very personable person. Personable person. Anyway, but she's actually talked to him, and it's going to be called Evil Dead Rise. And they're not sure on when it's going to go into production because, of course, the pandemic is on and not very many things are in production. Hard to do a character when you've got a mask on, unless it's an intentional mask.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Evil Dead Rise. Again, they're uncertain about anything, and Bruce won't give any details about it, of course, because he doesn't want to be spoiling the movie. But they're thinking that it's going to go into production late this year or early next year, again, depending on the pandemic, and when they can not use masks, because masks on everybody kind of kills the whole movie. But there's also video games of the Evil Dead. They're kind of into everything here, which is good. That's how you make money, is you get into every niche you can possibly get into. And Bruce does the voice on the video. So he's never really, even though at the end of the television series, The Evil Dead, he said he was so sick of Ash he was never going to do it again. And we, all of his fans, went, yeah, sure, let's just wait a couple of years and see what happens. And, of course, he's back into it again. It's such a good character and so much fun.
Yeah.
But, like he has said, he's getting older and getting into costume and all that blood and all that physical stuff. It takes longer now to film something because he doesn't have the physical thing. Stamina that he had, which is what we all go through as we age. He's very busy. He also does something like whose turn is it or something? It's a game show, and right now the name eludes me. But he goes on the road with this game show, or obviously, I'm talking pre-pandemic. He goes on the road with this game show periodically. He doesn't do many conventions, but he does do this thing where he goes on He takes this game show on the road, and he does it periodically. It wasn't just a one-shot thing. It's every now and then.
That's interesting. Yeah,
you know. So he keeps busy. For a long while, though, he was just staying with his wife and... What?
I'm sorry. I was just saying he does strike me as the person who would, as a person who would not only do something simply, you know, not just for a paycheck or just, you know, as an acting challenge, but somebody who would do something to also have fun with it, you know,
exactly.
Like, you know.
And so Ash was getting to be not fun.
Hmm.
And luckily, his boredom with it happened to coordinate with the end of the show, which ended pretty nicely. Because up until a couple of weeks before it ended, they still weren't sure if it was going to be renewed. But it ended enough that it could have gone on, or it was a very nice tie-up of everything. But it still, it wouldn't have been a big stretch to go on with it. But very nice.
Well, maybe he sees a movie, you know, another movie that may even in some way pass the baton to somebody else as less taxing in that it's, you know, it has an ending. You know, it when you do a TV series, you know, we hear so many stories of how long the hours are, especially mm-hmm. if you have any kind of prosthetic, you're there hours earlier than the rest of the cast.
Right.
You know, I just saw a behind the scenes thing of I was catching the second season of Doom Patrol, which is based on a comic book. But one of the actresses from the second season is a young girl, who has the features of a almost ape like, you know, because she's from Well, it's too complicated to get into, but, you know, yeah, and even with the more subtle, I mean, we're not talking like the extensive makeup, say, of the original Planet of the Apes movies, but we're, you know, it's more subtle, but she was still on set, you know, 5 a.m. To get that. And then, you know, and she's fairly young, and then to be having to remember her lines and, you know, stay awake it's going to be grueling, you know, because you don't know. They shoot things out of sequence, so you might have some downtime, but you got to keep the makeup on, and then you got to,
go
back
into
it.
And I think it was Armin Shimerman from Star Trek Deep Space Nine that he went into the cafeteria in full Ferengi dress and makeup, and Armin Shimerman, that would be something Armin Shimerman would do anyway, because he's a character. And a New Jersey native.
Not terribly far away. Certainly not far away from you.
It's right there. And apparently, when he was growing up, there were farms in Lakewood, which I found just astounding. Farms in Lakewood, oh my goodness. But so he grew up on a farm until they moved to Los Angeles. I was talking to his niece, and his niece is so nice. Such a nice person. You know, and she doesn't give personal information, but she'll give, you know, information about the roles he's played and if he's going to be doing. He teaches a lot now. He teaches acting a lot now. But, that would be something that Armin would do, would walk into the cafeteria in full Ferengi makeup, not just because it takes hours and hours and hours to get that on, but just for the silliness of it. And I also heard that it took LeVar Burton, even his little bit of prosthetics took hours to do, to get it right and make sure that it stayed where it was supposed to stay. And they actually used a hair clip for his visor, which was interesting.
And the irony of that is I think that obviously that created a problem for him to be able to see. So here he is playing a blind man, but with a device that gives him a different, you know, version of vision. And yet the actor himself, you know, could barely see out of it because it was a hair clip, you know, like you can't see out of that. So it was,
He's another amazing actor. I have two favorite Star Trek characters. One is Geordi LaForge, LeVar Burton's character on Next Generation. And the other is Elam Garak from Deep Space Nine. I just love
Anthony
that character.
I had the pleasure of meeting him, ironically, in New Jersey years ago when he was doing a book signing of his book and happened to come to, I believe it was Freehold, New Jersey, because he had friends there. And they, he made it sort of a business trip, but he was really there to visit them, or maybe they arranged it. And therefore, that was that close. And let's face it, he was a Star Trek star, so there was no way that he was going to be that close and I wasn't going to go there. But he was just the nicest man, autographed my book, talked about, just had the same kind of conversation that you and I are having now. Just so friendly and, was very candid and, is a remarkable actor. I mean, you can't go, much like Rene Auvergnat, you couldn't go through the 70s, 80s and 90s without, looking at a show that didn't have him on as a guest. I saw flipping through the channels about a week ago, Heart to Heart, and there he was, Andrew Robinson.
Bob, I have to make a little correction. It's Auvergnat.
I knew I was probably botching that up. Yeah.
it's hard to pronounce.
To think I was actually, he was supposed to be the guest at an event right in Tom's River a few years back. And sadly, at that time, he had developed a cold we were afraid would go into pneumonia if he got on a plane. So they had to cancel. And then we thought, maybe he would come the next year. And that didn't happen. And then we thought, the event itself didn't happen. And then, of course, he sadly passed.
That never happened. You're right. Such a talented actor, playing all kinds of different roles, including Odo, which was you talk about makeup. Yes, a lot of special effects, but he had to wear a lot of makeup too. The plastic face mask. Can you imagine how hot that was under the lights? Lord have mercy. But anybody in any science fiction who has a lot of prosthetics and things, you put those big lights on it, and boy, you better have some Gatorade around there.
And you wonder how the filming is being done now with the pandemic. You're supposed to keep a distance away, and yet you have to have a makeup person, on top of you practically to apply, the makeup. Just the other day, it was last Sunday when I watched, moving from Evil Dead to Walking Dead. I watched the show that comes on after it called Talking Dead, where they kind of go behind the scenes, and the panelists were talking about that particular episode, which had a kind of a flashback story of one of the characters, Daryl, and he meets this young woman who's in this cabin, and over the course of this episode, which moves from 3 months to 6 months to 12 months to over 2 years, and they go from being having a chilly relationship to being it's implied they're in love. And one of the panelists kind of mentions Yeah, you know, the story didn't really need them to be shown embracing or that or even kissing, and that was a little odd. And then all of a sudden it dawned on everybody all at the same time, well, we couldn't shoot. They said we couldn't shoot that because the writer was one of the panelists. She said, well, we couldn't shoot that because of the pandemic. And everybody was like, oh, duh, you know.
Yeah.
Like, they realized it, and then they said, but you know what? The story worked better that way than it would have had they been showing any kind of overt romance or anything, because it was just such a powerful story. Because, you know, and I won't get into the details of how it ended up, but, you know, it was just and because of the kind of aloof kind of character that Daryl is, you know, it just made more sense that way. And somebody even said, well, did you do that on purpose? You know, would you have done that on purpose if it wasn't for the pandemic? And the writer was like, you know what? I think we would have, you know, if we had the chance to have done those scenes, we wouldn't have done those scenes even without the pandemic. So that was interesting. You know.
Right. Cool.
But
well, you know, basically the pandemic has shut down everything. Any movie that's coming out now was already in the can before the pandemic came out.
Right.
Like Wonder Woman 1984, and the quote unquote big ones. You don't see big movies coming out because you can't do it. If it wasn't done before last year.
You know, and I know some people have mixed feelings about, you know, going to the movies. Within the start of this year, I've actually returned to the theater, and I've seen three movies. Two of them were Fathom movies where, you know, I was one of either two people in the theater, or three people in the case of Dr. No, which, you know, is an old movie, but was on the big screen, and Maltese Falcon, which I don't think I've ever seen. It was a classic film noir. But I did get to see it. I felt like it was a private screening, the movie Monster Hunter, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce Mila. I can't even pronounce her first name now. Now, you know, from Resident Evil, but now she's in another franchise, and she is like the action, female action star, par none. And she was with Ron Perlman, who people will remember as the original Beast from the TV series, the CBS TV series, Beauty and the Beast. Was in, what was it called? The Anarchy, Streets of Anarchy, or something like that more recently. And we, of course, as Star Trek fans, remember him, although he wouldn't have been recognizable as the Reman in Nemesis.
Mm-hmm.
But Ron Perlman's been in so many different things.
Oh, what a hard worker.
He was great in this movie. He looked good. He looked like 20 years younger, I thought. I was like, what the heck? You know, like,
yeah.
You know. And I don't know, because of the lack of beard or something, but he just, you know, he looked fantastic. So the movie, I think will kick off into a whole other franchise, because it's a little bit sci-fi. It's definitely action. It's a little bit horror. And it's just, you know, Mila Jovovich might be how it's, you know, pronounced.
Okay. Oh, I know who you're talking about.
She's just incredible. I always loved her in Resident Evil. We first saw her on the scene in the sci-fi movie Fifth Element. But, you know, she became more of the action star in all the, Evil franchise, you know, which is based on video game. And I didn't realize that Monster Hunter was also based on a video game.
Cool.
I just never heard about it before, but I hope, you know, that I'm sure the movie didn't do as well at the box office, since there wasn't much of a box office to show it. But I hope, and unlike Wonder Woman, I don't think Monster Hunter was put on a streaming service at the same time. I could be wrong about that. I hope I am, but you know, I don't know how well the movie did, but if it were, if we were living without a pandemic, I think the movie would have done quite well. Selling tickets and all.
Sure.
Cause it was one of those good, you know, popcorn action packed, movies that was pretty decently done. So.
An escape movie, which we all need. We all need an escape movie.
And I remember sitting there, you know, still wearing my mask, looking around the theater saying, I can't be the only person watching this. You know, this is so good. I can't believe that I'm, you know, but it, and it was the last night that they had this movie because it apparently it had been released in December. And they're like, you know, I think this was January. And they're like, yeah, this is the last night we have it. So I was like, well, okay, then I'm watching it. So,
yeah.
And was very happy I did because it was just like, you know, really action packed and it still left you wanting a little bit more because it left that definitely left the door open for a sequel. So I hope they make one.
Cool.
But
cool.
So I'm glad to see because as soon as I saw that, I was glad to see that, you know, that that Ash would be returning at least one more time. I knew that would make you happy.
It made me so happy. And I got that from a reliable source that, you know, who knows when it's actually going to be produced. But I would say probably the end of this year or next year. And I'm thinking probably next year just to be sure. But, yeah, it's definitely going to happen. But you were talking about Resident.
I was just going to segue into that. You know, you and I are in such sync together. Because. You know, that's another fun show, and it's got a little darkness here and there, but mostly it's really
Resident Alien, which is
Resident
a TV
Alien,
show on
Resident
FX.
Alien. Yeah, on Sci-Fi Channel, yes. Wednesday nights at 10.
At 10. And I just love that show. They have such characters that are such characters in and of themselves, and some that really annoy you, and a whole variety of things. Plus, the man who plays the alien that only one little kid can see him as an alien. The rest, everybody else sees him as a human, and he's trying to be like a human, and in doing that, he makes little comments to himself, and they're just hilarious. You know, he's making commentaries on the human race. He's making notes on when he does something that wasn't what a human should do. He's like, oh, okay, not what you should do. It's so creative and so much fun. And I hope it has a long run because it's great.
And we continue to get good new, you know, as good as the characters have been, we keep getting more. And we got, in the last two episodes, we got to see, you know, Linda Hamilton, you know, of Terminator fame, Sarah Connor, you know, playing a general. And, you know, so, and the two agents that she's enlisted, who are driving both of each other crazy because their personalities are, you know, diametrically opposed, but they're interesting to watch, the interaction between them.
Right.
And in the plot, it just keeps on going in other directions and this new doctor that has taken his place, you know,
right.
Like the funny remarks that our resident alien says, like, he has stupid hair. And there's a moment where he says, I might like him. No, he's a jerk, you know.
Yeah, he's always kind of talking to you, hear what he's telling himself. And it's just so, it's funny and it's serious at the same time. Oh, he also has those two aliens who are after him. To finish up what he was, what it was, he's an alien who came to Earth to eliminate humans, and he crashed instead of just landing his spaceship. He crashed in this little town in Colorado, and that was the premise of this. He's trying to find the device that will kill off all the humans, but it's buried in some glacier or something like that. So part of it is him looking for this device, and the other part of it is him trying to understand humans so that he can fit in for as long as it takes him to find this device. Which I thought was interesting at the end of this one. He found the device, but then there was this avalanche and kind of left it there.
I love how he learned English through watching reruns of Law and Order.
Yes, I love that. I love that. Very funny. You know, and it's stuff like that that makes it really, really funny. You can also get it on Hulu, on the because Hulu has a thing with FX. So, you know, if you decided to throw your TV out the window, which I'm just about to do, Hulu also has these shows. And, that's so good. I love it. I wait for Wednesday night. That's the only day I know is really a day. The other days of the week I could be, you know, maybe it's Thursday, maybe it's Saturday, I don't know. But Wednesday, I know when Wednesday is.
Yeah. Well, I think part of this show is that they made a conscientious effort to, you know, juxtapose the fact that he's an alien trying to learn about humanity in a town that is filled with people that also feel that they're out of place. You know, the deputy who is definitely unappreciated and, you know, who just quit her job, you know, in the last episode. You know, the assistant that he has that, you know, is struggling with her own identity and an abusive boyfriend and you know, and a daughter that becomes revealed to, well, actually she knows that it's her daughter, but, you know, and then there's the murder mystery that we still have that they're looking to uncover.
And
there's
they
just
still
so
haven't,
much going on, you know, and
the alien, the alien killed the guy who he looks like in order to take over his.
Yeah.
So there's still that they don't even know about. And, yeah, and the murder, I keep forgetting there was a murder, and that's how this whole thing started.
Well, there's a murder, but the murder wasn't the murder of his counterpart, which was kind of done by accident.
Right.
Although we did see him hallucinate and or have a dream of the real person that he impersonated. But we have another doctor whose place he took over, who supposedly, you know, the death was originally blamed as a suicide, but it was actually a murder because he was trying to give himself a tracheostomy. I just blew that line.
Tracheotomy.
I can't talk tonight. You know, but it was because he had been poisoned, and he was smart enough as a doctor to know what he would have to do to get oxygen in. There's that mystery. I have a theory as to who ultimately will be discovered, but we'll see if I'm right.
And then there's also the mystery of the two aliens who are trying to get him back.
There's that.
There's so many little subplots that are going on here, and that's part what makes it interesting, is there's all these little subplots going on. Because if it was just him trying to fit in, yeah, it would be entertaining, but not as entertaining as when you have all these other things going in and you're wondering how are they all going to connect to each other, because they all are going to connect to each other.
We have the goofy eventually. Mayor and the relationship he has with his wife and which was kind of funny in the last episode, because they have their little, you know, your little tiff and they kind of make up and all that, and then he keeps talking, and as a husband who's gotten himself in trouble with just saying a few more things that you didn't need to say and getting yourself in trouble, I could identify with that, and I was like cringing and saying no, stop, you don't need to say
up,
oh, you're going to get yourself in trouble.
Yep.
So I mean, and that shows how human it is, because, you know, who hasn't done that, you know?
Oh yeah.
I hate to
mind saying shut up, but your mouth keeps moving.
But we have 5 more minutes left. So I want to give you guys time to do your closing and also to share your contact information.
Okay.
Thank you, Hercules. It went by so fast, as it always does.
Yes, it is.
Especially when Anne-Marie and I get going.
Oh, you know, Emily just says, forget it. I'm gone. You know, Emily is Bob's wife, for those of you who don't know that. But, I had a great time. My name is Anne-Marie McGinley. I can be reached at this really strange email address called Wow for the Home. It's all one word, all lowercase, at gmail.com. And it's a memorable email address. But and I love to hear from everybody, so drop me a line.
Yep.
Oh, and this is perfect. My parrot is saying night-night. Couldn't have been any better timing.
I can be reached at beamaboard, all one word, at AOL.com. I still have an AOL address and my USS Challenger CO at Gmail address. And, you know, the Starfleet chapter I run is the USS Challenger, which can be found on USSChallenger.org and Facebook page, you know, like us on a Facebook page, USS Challenger. And, you know, I'm here every month with Spaced Out, thanks to Hercules, and I can't wait for our next installment. I'm not sure what we're doing, but we'll be doing something fun.
I can't wait.
And I'm sure.
Thank you so much for the stroll down memory lane for the Evil Dead. Bruce Campbell was a Autolycus on Hercules and Xena, and in the comic books, they've done crossovers between Evil Dead and the Xenaverse, I guess, for lack of a better name. I think there were two graphic novels in that series. And thank you for introducing me to Resident Alien. It sounds sufficiently strange, so I need to check it out.
Definitely check it out.
So thank you for awesome Spaced Out, Bob. And thank you so much for being a guest again, Anne-Marie. And thanks to all who've tuned in tonight, whether you're listening live or whether you're going to tune in later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we're going to close with the Mighty Elohim song by Linnell Griffin. And here we go.
Thank you.
Sound the trumpet.